This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 16th of November 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. This week we're asking, in the age of the internet, how do you manage your own image? We're asking this question because we hear endless complaints of Facebook friends and their endless self-aggrandizement. It seems that life is all cocktails, exotic travel, rooms with a view. Instagram is all food, architecture and one-upmanship. So who are you when you're online? Are you the same person that goes to work, has real friends that you do real things with? And how do you come across? Are you a wisecracking laugher minute when you're staring at your smartphone, or are you a holier-than-thou type invested in all the world's problems, emoting and liking every candlelit vigil uploaded to the web? We'll speak to the founders of an app that celebrates the ordinary, Daniel Wilson and Martin Adolfsson of Minutiae.
What I think is important is all these kind of in-between moments. That's really what makes up the bulk of our lives. That is our real life, and we think that these moments deserve to be captured.
We'll visit the artist Caroline Walker in her studio to explore her world of surveillance, voyeurism and the power of the gaze. And we'll speak to the tech writer and blog editor who thinks we haven't yet lost our souls to the like button. How do you manage your image online then is this week's edition of Culture with Robert Bound on Monocle 24. In an age where some people can't put their shoes on in the morning without telling or showing the world, we're investigating how we curate our lives to online communities. One of the major platforms or culprits of this is Instagram, the app that allows you to upload the highlights of your life for friends to see. It's chock-a-block with pictures of sunsets, mountaintops and fancy brunches. The moments people might like to brag about are generally what's on offer here. But what about day-to-day life? A new app called Minutiae is a sort of anti-Instagram that celebrates the ordinary. When an alarm goes off, you have to upload a photograph of whatever you're doing at that very moment, which might well be sipping cocktails on the beach, but is more likely to be doing the washing up or waiting in for the boiler man. I spoke to Minutiae's creators Martin Adolfsson and Daniel Wilson down the line from New York and Toronto, respectively.
The mundane, in a way, is what this project is interested in, and by definition, the mundane is something that's not interesting, so we don't have an inclination to document it or to think about it in those terms. And so that's what we're trying to push back on, is to, you know, this is the bulk of your life, so why not examine it?
Exactly. And so let's tell our listeners exactly how this app works. Talk us through it. An alarm goes off on your phone at a random time. You take a photograph. And then what happens?
So what happens is that all the users receive a notification simultaneously across the globe at the exact same minute, regardless of the time zone that they may be in at that moment. Once they receive the notification, they have 60 seconds to take a photo of whatever is in front of them there and then. Once they've taken the photo, they can then swipe up or down on their smartphone to view other people's images taken at the exact same minute as they took their image. However, it's all anonymous. There's no sharing, no liking, no commenting, no nothing. Once you close down the app, all those other people's images are gone forever. You will never find them again. The next step for collectors, we then also collect all the images that they've taken over the course of 3.9 years or 1,440 days. And we print them and make them into a hand-bound book that's consisting of the images that the collector has been taken with the smartphone app over the course of 1,440 days.
People around the world will be listening to this and smirking slightly at this, and I am as well on the end of the line here in London. I love the idea of this. It seems like the opposite of Facebook, the opposite of Instagram, the opposite of photographic instant gratification. What is the significance of 1,440 days, Daniel?
So the 1,400, I agree totally with you. I think that that's what we're pushing back against too, is the, you know, the Facebook Instagramification of our lives and how that dictates how we kind of curate this image. But the 1,440 days is equivalent to the number of minutes in 24 hours. So we call the 1,440 is the cycle. So once you complete that cycle, you will have a photo from every single minute of a 24-hour period.
And tell us about that. We touched on that, and that might be the most interesting part of this, in fact, this debate about the use of image and people's personal editing and ownership of their image, images of their lives, and the constant desire, I suppose, or the temptation to self-aggrandize your lives. You only put on to Facebook pictures of you lying on a beach with a cocktail or at a glamorous party or at a beautiful sunset, for example. Daniel, as an artist, what are you trying to inject back into our lives? Because it is the mundane, but there's something a little bit more philosophical, presumably, than that as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what I've noticed, you know, Facebook actually and Instagram have not been around for very long, but I think that the effect it's had on us is pretty big, where it's kind of turned us all into publishers and editors, where we make these decisions about what we're going to put on our wall or what we're going to take a photo of. And that kind of informs how we see the world itself. We kind of look at the world through, you know, is this moment rising above the threshold of postable? And I think that with the app or with the project that we're working on, Minutia, it's kind of looking at everything below that bar, the things that, you know, we wouldn't post, that the moments that you would tend to ignore, you know, the moments that often get kind of erased through repetition, and just the fact that they're, you know, boring in a way. In the moment, they're boring, but afterwards, we think that they can become very interesting.
And so, in a way, you're looking for kind of moments of accidental artistic creation or acts of serendipity, I suppose, especially after 1,440 days worth of photographs have been uploaded to the Minutia website storage facility, and then they get turned into this book. It's only then by looking through the book that you notice actually that there is a lot of perhaps beauty in the mundane, as much as there might be boringness and ugliness as well, but you perhaps searching for moments of accidental beauty.
Yeah, I think that that's what we've found. We've been doing some alpha testing of a limited version of the app, and we've definitely found that we take photos of things that we would never have photographed otherwise. And when you look back on it, it's kind of amazing. I had a photo of my feet in bed the other day, and looking at it, it was, you know, kind of a striking photo, actually. But it's also, you kind of have this freedom through the constraint where you're being told when to take this photo. So you don't have to worry anymore about, you know, is this interesting or is this boring? There's no thought process involved. It's just, now's the time to take a photo.
And Martin, I mean, as a professional photographer, you obviously are searching. It's your job to search for these moments that are photogenic. But do you think starting this app and looking at the results as they come in, obviously using it yourself when it kicks off, do you think it'll actually change the way that you shoot for clients or for anything, that you kind of are allowing the boring image back into your kind of professional consciousness?
I'm not sure, really. I mean, usually what happens when you're, you know, when you're assigned a job is that you end up with a lot of images, and often, you know, you have three or four of those images that actually makes it into the magazine, and they might not always be representative of what you felt happened during that assignment, but that's kind of what the editors, you know, who commissioned the piece wants to see, and it's really their vision. So I hope that, you know, this will kind of inform my assignment work a bit more. But I also just want to touch on another piece in terms of this, the book, which is the result for the collectors. We also think about this photo album as a kind of anti-photo album. And traditionally, a photo album, you know, consists of images, consists of these highlights that's, you know, been taken over the course of someone's lifetime. But what I think is important is like all these kind of in-between moments that Daniel mentioned before, that's really what makes up the bulk of our lives. That is our real life. And we think that these moments deserves to be captured. And that's kind of why we came up with this project.
And just lastly, Daniel, this is obviously a project that is also about time and about allowing time to elapse 3.5 years or so before anyone sort of sees the fruit of their labours on this. Is that part and parcel of it as well, that you sort of, you might just remember that time when you thought your feet looked photogenic in bed? Is that part and parcel of it, that there is not the temptation to upload it, have it liked and shared, and make almost sort of an ironic Instagram account with these potentially boring photographs?
Yeah, I think that that's something that we really liked about the concept for this project, is that it's a bit demanding. It doesn't provide gratification. You don't get people complimenting you on your shot or what you're doing, and no one even knows who you are. So it's just this total anonymity that you get to. But I think that there's an enjoyment in that as well. And I think that this is a project that probably isn't for everyone and might not even be for many people. But I think that those people that actually engage with it and go through this marathon process of almost 4 years and being interrupted at a random point in time every day will get this very interesting and fairly representative portrait of their lives. I mean, I think that I've noticed that many of the photos I've taken have been of my laptop screen, which kind of lets me know how much time I'm actually spending sitting in front of my laptop. Those are not the photos that you would normally see posted on, you know, Facebook or Instagram, for example.
That was Martin Adelson and Daniel Wilson, creators of the Minutiae app. For more information, head to minutiae-app.org. Stay tuned, because after the break, we'll discuss image and voyeurism in the world of the artist Caroline Walker.
Monocle has bureau around the world. In Tokyo, Hong Kong, Singapore, Istanbul, London, Toronto, and New York City. In Toronto, our bureau chief is Thomas Lewis.
What we're trying to do is to keep our tentacles spread far and wide, I suppose, for this vast, vast country and this really dynamic city too here in Toronto, to try and bring the most accurate and the most vibrant flavour we can of this place that we hold so dearly to us.
Hear from Monocle's editors and correspondents on the stories that matter and the places that matter every day on Monocle 24.
Now we're going to wander offline and into the studio of the artist Caroline Walker. Walker's canvases turn the viewer into a voyeur and subtly play on the behaviour between her protagonists, who could be variously engaged in cleaning the windows of a modernist house, undressing in a hotel, or gazing at each other through the steam of a public bath in Budapest. Walker's fascinated by how people make their own image in the internet age. Who's looking at who and why?
As soon as I was old enough to hold a pencil, I was drawing pictures of women, and always very glamorous looking women, probably inspired by pictures that I'd seen in magazines or in films. And I suppose sort of ideas of women that were quite far away from my own experience, maybe of my, you know, my mum or other women in my life. And that's an obsession that's really kept with me and through my artistic career as well. Probably because I've always, as a woman, I'm always interested in my own feelings about what it is to be represented and to manage your own image in the world and to be looked at. And that's something that I've continued to be interested in my work. What I do with the work is a mixture of setting models up in very, I suppose, in quite contrived settings, and then also taking surreptitious photographs of people when they're slightly unaware of being watched. And the work that I make becomes a mixture of those two things together. So it's a mixture of quite a managed idea of representing the self and then one that's much more caught off guard, I suppose.
Your works encompass images that could easily have been a very posed, maybe sexy, or maybe certainly kind of something that might have been part of a modelling shoot for something like a catalogue or something like a glamour shoot or something. There's something glamorous also about the kind of backdrops of these places. At the moment, looking around your studio, we're in Palm Springs, and it kind of looks warm and glamorous and kind of has an air of sexiness to it somehow. But you are always painting the models after they've finished their shoot or before they've finished their shoot somehow. There's an idea that you're not allowing them to manage their image, or that you are managing it for them, but you're wanting the bit that they almost don't want you to see. Are you looking at the paintings almost as a voyeur, or are you trying to give that sense in the way that the angles that you choose, the kind of oblique angles that you choose to take your subjects at, are you trying to suggest a kind of element of voyeurism, I wonder?
Definitely, yeah. And even when I am working with models on location, I will guide them in what I want. But particularly when I was doing this shoot in Palm Springs, sometimes the models that I find can be quite interesting, or they're very used to sort of managing their appearance in a way. And it can take quite a while to get them to stop performing. So with the models that I had for this shoot, I had a former Miss Colorado from 1977, who's in her mid-50s. And then I had two women in their mid-30s, one of whom had had several children. It was really interesting working with them over the course of the day. So to begin with, they couldn't stop posing and being very aware of me photographing them. But then as the day went on, they were actually just sort of getting to know one another and chatting away and things. And then they would start to forget that I was there. And that's really when I got all the interesting material for me, because suddenly the sort of performance was over and I was sort of like creeping around in the background, taking pictures of them behind cactuses and walls and things. So I think they would probably be quite surprised in some ways to see the paintings that come out of that, I think, because they probably have a very particular idea of how they are in that setting.
And what their job is, presumably, especially a former professional model, a straight-on, glamorous, attractive model, maybe what we think of as modelling, and then how you've used it, their images or the backs of them or the sides of them or them from strange angles, maybe not what they would think of as their best angle.
They didn't. Miss Colorado was very keen to, she said, "Honey, paint my stomach better." And I was like, if I wanted a washboard stomach, I'd have got somebody in their 20s.
So that's the thing. So, and I suppose you are taking power away from people, I suppose, in this sense. But you're also making a comment, presumably, on power. And if this discussion is about managing the image, where do you sit in terms of that? Because you're setting up the shoot, you're photographing these people, mostly women, and then you're going back to your studio here in London and painting them. Is there an idea of managing that image, manipulating it, and finding the strangeness, I suppose, in that whole idea of managing the image? Is that in every bit of your practice, from choosing your models in your location to seeing a finished work on the wall of a gallery?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, it's quite... Every decision that I'm making when I set things up is about managing that image. So when I did this shoot at Palm Springs, I thought it was pretty much guaranteed that I'd have a sunny day. So I already had kind of an idea in my head about what kind of imagery I might get from it. But then the afternoon of the shoot was the one day it was cloudy there. So I had to change my expectations, I suppose, which then get changed again when I'm in the studio. So there's this, the work all comes from this sort of very managed idea of what I want, but that keeps changing as I go through the process, and what ends up in a gallery at the end might be quite different to what I thought it was going to be.
And how interested are you in the online management of people's images, the world of Instagram, Facebook, any social network where anyone would have you believe that they live a life of high glamour and cocktails on the beach in the front row of a Rihanna gig at all times? People that you would be surprised perhaps that they don't necessarily always live in that world, but the online exhibition is always one of kind of glamour and non-stop kind of event. Your work sits in a very different place, a more measured, stately place, certainly an oil on canvas place rather than the immediacy of the online environment. But this seems to me something in your work of a comment on, I guess, the strangeness of presenting sort of a fiction every time you go online. I wonder if you're interested in that, or if there's anyone you follow that you're kind of itching to put down in oil on canvas, any Instagram stars, for example.
That's a good idea, actually. I haven't thought about it.
We'll go 50-50 on that one.
Some models on Instagram. But it's certainly something that interests me as quite an avid Instagram user myself.
It's always the first night. It's always the private view in Caroline Walker's universe.
Exactly. I think I might have lost a few followers during my Palm Springs trip anyway. Too many pictures by the pool. But yeah, that whole thing about this sort of idea of how you present yourself as always the best possible version is such a characteristic of how we manage our images now, and we're so much more adept at it than, you know, I see a teenager's Instagram feed or something, I think I wouldn't have known how to make myself look good when I was a teenager. Look dreadful. But they're all so aware of how they look and how they're perceived. And it's almost like that's the only way that they can see themselves, through the eyes of a follower or a Facebook friend or something. And I think that is interesting as a sort of very, it's such a throwaway way of receiving imagery. And I suppose making paintings, the idea is kind of making things something more permanent or much slower. I don't know, I think I'm still interested in a lot of those things as a inspiration for what I might be painting.
Yeah, and it kind of maybe goes back to that, you know, that there are programs on smartphone cameras that allow you to that sort of take 10 pictures, take 10 images when you ask it to take one, and it will choose what it thinks is the best, or you can choose an edit of the five of the best or something in order to make sure it gets your best side, and everyone becomes Miss Colorado. And I suppose that's something that you come up against with your models when you're choosing them, that they want their best side to be presented, and you're like, no, you just face that way, you just wear this really weird ill-fitting swimming costume or whatever it might be, and that's how I'd like to portray you. Do you ever come a cropper with your models who kind of say, I don't want to wear that, I want to look great?
No, they usually do what they're told because I'm paying them. But well, they vary a lot. If you work with a life model, they tend to be much more kind of happy for you to do anything. But if you work with somebody that's maybe more used to doing modeling work, which makes them look good, they are a bit more reluctant perhaps, or they're sort of saying, oh, how about this outfit instead? And I'm like, no, like, I want the bad one.
And I suppose that goes completely against all the things that we're learning how to do in our online environment, where there are photo programs that, as I say, take the best image out of 10. You're kind of teaching people to look the other way or take the shot before or the shot afterwards, or see the beauty in something a little bit more mundane or strange, especially. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of strangeness, actually, I find in your work, in the sense that someone's chosen to put that image as a painting rather than pick the next one. Is that something you want people to kind of scratch their heads about when they look at your work?
Yeah, if there's not that there, they just become paintings of very beautiful places where we'd all like to be on holiday. I think there has to be that slight awkwardness in them, or a feeling that it is something that isn't quite what you would be, isn't the sort of perfect vision of that place or those people. And that there may be characters or scenarios that we could envisage ourselves in a more interesting way than perhaps an Instagram picture of, you know, somebody lying by the pool sipping a cocktail.
To look at one of the specific works on the wall here in your studio, Caroline, is a one where you are, or the viewer is peering through a cactus at a girl by a pool. In terms of image making, what is going on in this one? Because this seems to me to be one of the most kind of explicitly voyeuristic pictures that you've made.
This was when we arrived at the 5-star hotel in Palm Springs. We were hanging around in the room and I got my camera out and was sort of taking pictures out of the window through the cactuses. And there was this couple hanging out at the pool, on the other side, a young girl and a guy that was probably old enough to be her dad, and a little fluffy white dog. And the girl was just sitting there taking selfies the whole time. So I thought that was really, it seemed such a kind of, to encompass all the stuff that we're talking about the idea of the life that you want to present, that it seemed very apt to be taking a picture of her photographing herself.
That was artist Caroline Walker in her London studio. Find more about her wonderful work at carolinewalker.org. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound. To finish the show, we're going to talk about the schizophrenic nature of online personalities. You might be one person on Instagram and then an entirely different person on Twitter. But are either of these correct depictions of the real life you? I spoke to Matt Buchanan, tech writer and editor of the online journal The All.
I think there is definitely like a performative aspect to how people do their online presence. If you look at how people share things on Facebook, like if you look at a lot of the pieces that have become popular, like BuzzFeed, for instance, a lot of their, especially if you look like a year and a half ago or so, a lot of their most popular posts were identity posts where it was like 20 things only graduates of Harvard would get or whatever, something like that, right? And right. So you're sharing that less because, you know, you think this is an amazing piece, but because like it identifies you as a Harvard person, or, you know, if you struggles of curly haired people or whatever. So you're sort of constantly enacting and reenacting their own vision of their identity. like my feed, especially lately, has been like from people back home. They, you know, it's a lot of image macros and image memes. And you have these sort of moments in time, particularly around elections or things in the news that people feel like they have to weigh in on them to sort of show, partly like less to sort of make a substantive comment. It's not like they think they're changing the world particularly, but it's a way of expressing themselves.
Yeah, everyone likes to weigh in on things. I mean, there's obviously been some tragic news in the last couple of days here in Europe. People like to weigh in on these things and often do it perhaps without subtlety. Maybe not in an awful and evil way, but maybe in a bit of a clumsy way, I guess. I guess we're also trying to take the sort of slightly lighter side with the idea for this show, it being about one's image in the internet, that social media kind of allow you to live a bit of a Walter Mitty life. Have you seen in your days as a tech writer and as one of the editors at All that this happens, that people can live an online life that is perhaps very different to the one that they live day to day?
Whenever you take a photo or you are making an editorial decision of some kind, you're choosing what to leave out above anything else, right? And so if you look at somebody's Instagram feed, you know, a lot of people often have like a very, you know, they present the most picturesque version of their life. But there's a lot of time in between that, which you could say it's a bad thing. And obviously like it's constructed, but it's really pleasant compared to like Twitter, right? Where people are, if they're very active on it, they're posting 30 or 40 or 50 things a day. And maybe that's a more real construction of themselves because it's, you know, thoughts and words.
It's almost like they have no inner monologue, or this is definitely a lot of the noise of their outer monologue, I suppose, right? I suppose there's an honesty to having a bit of verbal diarrhea, I suppose, in a sense. In terms of image, one's image and the internet and how one doctors the other, I wonder whether it is kind of three different Matt Buchanans that is across Instagram and Twitter, for example, that it's a different version of yourself that you're broadcasting there.
Oh, sure. It's like, you know, every medium is unique, right? Like the things that work on radio don't work on television and don't work in a movie theater. And the same thing, like a version, if I were to put my Twitter self on Facebook, it would be probably very appalling to people on Facebook. If I were to put my Instagram self on Twitter, it would probably be like very, very boring, very, very sleepy. You know, you can sort of see that with one of the real insights that BuzzFeed, for instance, has had is that like versus a lot of other media companies is their recognition of this fact, what works on Vine doesn't work on Instagram and doesn't work on Facebook. Each medium is really distinct for various reasons.
That was Matt Buchanan, editor of theall.com, speaking to me down the line from New York City. So how do we edit our image? Well, it's a bit more nuanced than just hating people who pretend their lives are a bowl of cherries. There are some deep-seated and fascinating reasons for the way we choose to appear online. For most people, it's just a bit of fun. But what happens to our sanity and our sense of proportion when the internet abolishes reality? Thank God for the men behind Minutiae, the app that celebrates the ordinary. Now, there's a good way to get your sanity back. Maybe it takes an artist to speak truth to the power of online craziness. In the age of the internet, how do you manage your own image then? Honesty is the best policy, even if you do want to imagine you live your life under a soft and sexy Instagram filter. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. You've been listening to Culture on Monocle 24. My producer was the million followers, Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bounds, and thanks for tuning in.